Welcome to the Dancer Mama Podcast, a show about motherhood for pole dancers, athletes, and entertainers. Join me, Jenna Alyssa, a pole dancer, stripper, and first-time mom, as I chat with fellow dancer mamas and knowledgeable experts on all things pregnancy, postpartum, parenting, and pole. Tune in every Tuesday as we add our voices to the motherhood conversation. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Dancer Mama Podcast. This is your host, Jenna Alyssa. I'm back today with a very exciting guest episode I'm sure you are all familiar with, Felicity Logan. Felicity is a self-taught pole artist and contortionist who began her story in a small town in Scotland. At 18 years old, she left the conventional life and began a new life as a pole dancer who performed worldwide. Through this incredible journey, she gained inspiration, valuable knowledge, and developed her own unique pole dance style. Felicity has competed in many competitions around the world and has garnered titles including Pole Theatre UK 2015 Classique winner, Dance Filthy Australia 2016 winner, Pole Theatre Sydney overall winner, and more. She's the mom to one little boy, and she has been candidly sharing her experience pole dancing, stretching, and navigating entrepreneurship throughout pregnancy and motherhood. So Felicity, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You are a true pole icon, one of the original pole icons, one of the first people I started following on Instagram when I got into pole. And I love how transparent you are when you share on social media. You're always reflecting on where you are now and where you've been and sharing like the reality behind your success, which I think is really inspiring for the many people who look up to you.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear. Like, I'm happy that you like my stuff on Instagram. And yeah, I always try to be as real as possible. For everyone that's, you know, looking at my page, but also for myself, like it just feels more natural to be real, just to share exactly what you said, like where I am at the moment and where I've been, so that I can hopefully inspire people and also like relate to other people.
Yeah. And like you, I can imagine, like you said, it is helpful for other people, but then also for ourselves to reflect on our journey, because we can get kind of stuck in the present, but like beating ourselves up maybe, or stuck in like the kind of difficulties of day to day without looking at like the whole scope of where we are and where we've been. So I can imagine that's helpful for you as well. So I'd like to start with kind of the origin of your story. So I usually ask people about their pole origin story, like how they discovered pole, how they came to pole. And for people, it's often that they saw like an ad in a newspaper for classes or something. But how did you come to pole?
Well, it was actually from a movie that I saw. The name of the movie is Dancing at the Blue Iguana, and it's like about a strip club. It's not really glamorous, like all the strippers in it were kind of going through personal struggles, and you know, there was parts of it that really were not glamorous, but I just saw it and I was like, oh my god, I need to do this. Like it was really strange. It was like this deep urge, like as soon as I saw the movie I was like, I need to find out how I can dance on a pole. And this was like so many years ago, so like there really wasn't actually that many pole studios around. So literally like the day after, I was doing like a Google search to find out where I could learn to pole dance, and it just so happened that the pole dancing studio, which was the only one in Glasgow, I was living in Glasgow at the time, was 2 minutes from my house, like down the road, which was really strange. It was like a kind of antique shop that they cleared away during the day, and then they did like pole classes at night.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, it was so strange. Like it was like destiny. Like I just knew that this was what I was supposed to do. And I went to a class there, and I think I like stayed there for a month or something. And then I was feeling like I wasn't learning fast enough, so I bought a pole and I taught myself. And I just, I didn't stop. It became my life.
That's so cool. It's very like serendipitous that you saw it in a movie, and then there just happened to be the only studio in your area was so close to you. And then taking your destiny into your own hands by taking charge of your learning and being self-taught. And so from what I've gathered from what you've shared of your story on social media, your pole journey and your work as an exotic dancer are closely intertwined.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Would you be able to share a little bit more about your journey and your career as an exotic dancer?
Yeah, so I started doing, like, I actually started going to the pole classes when I was 17. And the girl that was teaching the class was an exotic dancer. And I was just, like, in awe of her. Just the way that she didn't really actually do that many kind of interesting things on the pole. But it was just, like, the way she moved. She had this, like, sensuality that was just, like, at the time I was like, wow, I need to learn this. And she said to me, the only really way to truly learn it is to go and dance in a strip club. I was too young, so I waited until I was 18. And then I, like, that was, like, my goal was, like, just get there. Like, the day after my 18th birthday, I just went straight to the club. And, yeah, so I mainly did it to learn how to be a sensual dancer. Like, I just did it for the experience of this. But then I also fell in love with the job, and I ended up doing it for, like, 12 years. So it was a huge part of my life, and I learned so much from it. It was, like, the most valuable experience ever. It was just, yeah, incredible. So, yeah, it was amazing. And I learned so much from that job. Like, I learned a lot of my skills from the job, from other dancers as well. Like, I took bits and pieces from the other girls that I was working with, but also I learned so much about myself, and I learned, like, some amazing skills, which I actually use today. So, yeah.
Yeah, because now you're an entrepreneur and a business owner, and I'm sure some of the kind of life skills required to be successful as an entrepreneur, probably even as a parent or just navigating challenging things, you could learn a lot of those skills working in the clubs.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty resilient. I'm pretty, like, emotionally resilient now. And I really wasn't in the beginning. I got offended really easily, and I didn't like when people said no to me. And I took everything to heart, but, like, it really gave me, like, a thick skin, which I think is important for business and also motherhood as well. And also it gave me, like, I learned, like, a lot of intuition as well. I learned how to communicate deeply with people, how to, like, read people. It was just, it was like a university for me. Of the best kind, the craziest university you could ever go to. But
yeah, I can imagine. The resiliency you learn from being in the club, and it can take a long time to learn. And I think it's not guaranteed that you will develop a thicker skin either. Like, you have to do the inner work too. You posted the other day something about it comes from just being you, like, feeling inadequate in the environment of the club because of something a customer says, or just comparing yourself to other girls, and then trying to take these external actions to make yourself feel better or feel more competitive or whatever, like hair extensions and now body modifications and all these things. And it can take a long time to learn that those things, there's nothing wrong with them, but they may not make the difference that you hope they will.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I remember at the beginning, that was, like, the first year or so. I would say the first couple of 2 or 3 years, like, I thought I had to be different, and I thought I had to, like, not be myself, and I thought I had to be, like, other dancers. And it took, like, a while for me to understand that, like, you know, being okay with myself was actually what I needed to succeed as a exotic dancer. It was like I was in, like, comparison mode for the first few years, and it was really tough. But then after, it was like, okay, actually I make more money when I'm just myself, when I'm just, like, you know, real. So yeah, I guess I gained that also from the industry as well, to just like embrace who you are, because that's really what people like, that's what people love.
And that would translate to the pole world now too, right? Trying making a living in the pole world, you can do that in an industry that's fairly saturated now by being completely authentic and just being able to know that what you offer, no one else can offer that exactly. But it's so hard, right? Because yeah, being getting out of comparison mode, I don't know if that's a journey that has an end date. It's hard to keep that in mind all the time.
Yeah, I think it's human nature as well. I think we learn that even as young kids, like you just compare, that's what you do. So I think yeah, it's never something that's going to leave completely. I don't think that I think there will always be it'll always be there, and you just have to kind of learn like how to deal with it, and how to like not put yourself in situations where you're going to compare and feel bad about yourself. Like, when you're on Instagram, like just minimize the scrolling, and if there's something that's triggering you, or you find yourself comparing yourself to others in a bad way, then take a break, go offline for a couple of days. That's what I do quite frequently, actually. That's why I'm so hard to get in touch with. I take regular breaks.
That's good advice. Yeah, we have to protect our energy, right? For sure.
Yeah. I would definitely say that this is another thing that's so important with like entrepreneurship is like, my business is about me, so I have to be feeling good, and if I'm in a good flow and I'm in a good state of mind, then this is projected through my business. So yeah, protecting my energy is like for me is number one, and also with motherhood as well, as you know, is your energy can be left pretty dry, so it's like finding, ways to self-care and to like put yourself first and kind of, yeah, balance your energies so that you can give more.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a lot more about motherhood, but yeah, protecting your energy in motherhood also, because especially when your children are young, you're co-regulating them all the time, whether you realize it or not. So you need to take the steps to tend to yourself, and then they will feel that through you, and they'll feel it if you don't too. And it's not probably doing them any favors, but hard to balance it all. But
Yeah.
talking about your career as an exotic dancer, so you started working in Scotland, it sounds like, but you have danced all over the world. What are some of the places that you have worked in the clubs? And was there a place that was like your favorite, or any highs and lows through dancing internationally?
Yeah, actually, I didn't start in Scotland. I
Oh, okay.
moved from, I was in Scotland, and then I didn't want family to find out, although I didn't have any family in that city at the time, but it was just like it felt too familiar. So actually I went to Newcastle to start in England. That's where I started. But yeah, I traveled a lot. I had really itchy feet. I still do from time to time. And yeah, I just wanted to explore the world and just just like be able to use my work as a way to travel and experience everything. So I was dancing in America, like Miami. I danced in Hollywood. I danced in the Caribbean, a few different islands, Puerto Rico, Mexico, many places in England, Scotland, France, Spain.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of places. I can't remember how many exactly, but I did at one point write them all down, and I even shocked myself. I was like, wow, that's a lot. So yeah, it was an amazing experience, and in every country, like I learned something new, and every country was so different as well. Like every club was just completely different, like different cultures. Like I didn't do the traveling kind of like tourist stuff, but I did like the real life strip club stuff. So like I learned mostly about other countries through the customers that I met at work. So I didn't actually do that much sightseeing, but I was kind of like, I was kind of in the culture, if you know what I mean.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a way to experience and experience the side of a place that not a lot of people would get to, especially if they were just kind of traveling. That's probably one of the most authentic experiences you could have. And I feel like it would take so much courage to go dance in all those different places. Because, like you said, even I live in Alberta in Canada, and even city to city, province to province, the rules are different. Kind of the structure of how money is made in the club is different. Some places put more emphasis on like big shows. Sometimes it's more emphasis on like working the floor. So I feel like it would take a lot of courage to travel and dance like that.
Yeah, actually, I remember I danced in Canada as well, but in Vancouver. The strange thing is like I never felt scared, and I don't know why. Like I start at 18 actually. Like during my first year of dancing, I went to dance in Miami on my own. I just turned 18, and I just like went there and found a club, and like. I never felt any fear about traveling on my own. It was quite strange actually. And I always felt like guided and protected, and I always felt like it was what I was supposed to do. So yeah, I mean, looking back now, I wouldn't really recommend some of it. Like I did get myself into quite a lot of sticky situations, and I did get taken advantage of many times, and I guess it was all part of life, and it was all part of like the learning experience, but it definitely wasn't like all smooth sailing. Like there was a few times where, yeah, it was like I didn't gain anything apart from difficulty.
Right.
So yeah, like I think, and there's a lot, I mean, in clubs when you're like a young naive girl, there's a lot of drugs, and there's a lot of people like offering things and trying to sweet talk you, and even like managers and things like that, they can be quite corrupt as well. So yeah, it was a lot, but yeah, as I said, it didn't really intimidate me at the time.
Well, it's probably for the best because you said you felt guided and protected. And looking back, of course, I think for a lot of people, we look back at parts of our youth and we're like, hope our children will not be in those situations that we went into, right? But because you felt that way and you didn't feel fear, you were probably kind of in alignment and in a sense, kind of the energy you were putting out or the energy you were going into it with was coming back to you in a sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I
Yeah.
think so as well.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. And you're still kind of a citizen of the world. You're still traveling and making international moves. So it seems like that's just in your blood. But let's shift gears a little bit and talk about your pull and flexibility journey as you went through this like amazing career as an exotic dancer. So you're currently known for your sensual style on the pole, but also your flexibility, especially backbending. And people would be surprised if they read your captions sometimes to learn that that was it, you it wasn't always that way. So can you share a little bit about how you gained flexibility and kind of the path towards working towards where you are now?
Yeah, actually this ties in with like the last question as well. So it's a funny story, but when I was 21, I was dancing in the Caribbean, and I fell in love with my boss, like the owner of the place. And he was very manipulative, and he was kind of steering me to be better and better so that people would come in, and more people would come into the club, because it was like something rare that like a girl would dance on the pole. They had many dancers, but they were like not doing anything acrobatic. It was like mostly stuff on the floor, not very experienced, not very high level. So he was making good money from my skills. And he said, you're amazing, but the only thing is you're not flexible enough. And at this point, I never really focused on flexibility at the beginning. I just didn't really know much about it. I didn't actually know that you could gain flexibility. It sounds stupid, but like I thought that you had to be born with it. So I just never really bothered. I didn't even know how to stretch. Like he said to me, you need to stretch. And I said, how do I do that? I was focusing on like the deadlifts and the Aishas and like, you know, the kind of strong looking tricks. And anyway, he kind of like bullied me a little bit to get my flexibility, mainly just by calling me stiff. And eventually, like I didn't stretch, and eventually I left the island and he went to jail. Actually, he was a bit of a criminal. I told you it was a crazy story. And I went back home and I just stretched. I was like, I need to prove him wrong. I need to prove that I am not stiff and that I am going to succeed as a pole dancer. You know, he kind of drummed it into me that I needed flexibility to be amazing on the pole. So I started stretching for my splits. I got my box splits and I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like I can manipulate my body into doing amazing things. Like I'm just going to keep going. And then I started to love stretching. I was like, it calms me down. It like regulates me. It makes me feel good. So I got really carried away with it and really obsessive about it. And I started to do contortion, again, self-taught in my bedroom. And it just became like, it's such a huge passion. Like this flexibility just became like the most important priority of my life. And I didn't stop. I stretched every day, like literally every day. And I didn't injure myself somehow, which was surprising because stretching every single day, I don't know if it's very good, but eventually I reached like contortion level. So I proved him wrong and I found a new passion. So it was all worth it.
Yeah, that's such an interesting story how like a manipulative kind of bully got under your skin and you kind of took ownership of it. And now it is one of the biggest features of your life, your business, and what you're known for. So way to kind of make lemonade out of lemons, I guess, so to speak. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. And like, I'm sure he doesn't know, like, you know, like, it's crazy that he told me I was stiff. And now like my whole business is about flexibility. Mm-hmm. It's like, and the strange thing is like the day after, on the day that I left the island, he said to me, you're going to thank me one day. And I didn't really know what he meant. And I was like, okay, well, thank you for what? You were an asshole, you know? That's what I thought in my head at that point. And now actually, I would love to thank him because it changed my whole life, actually. So, yeah, interesting.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes, very, like another kind of, things are just like in alignment. Maybe you can't see it at the time, but... So we'll talk a little bit about some of your other performance experiences, your competitions, but I want to hit on something that happened quite recently. So you recently got to perform on stage with Snoop Dogg, who every pole dancer on Instagram knows that he is touring and he has someone, Nicole, right? Select like elite local pole dancers to join him on stage, which I think is the coolest thing. I love that he's doing that. So would you be able to share a little bit about what that experience was like?
Yeah, it was amazing. And I mean, I didn't have enough time to actually prepare for it at all. It was crazy. I had like 24 hours to get a flight and get all my stuff together, and you know, my nails were a mess, and I was like, oh, I wish I had had like a month's notice, you know.
Or do you know like why it was such short notice?
I don't know. And I've actually asked this to a few people. No one seems to know, but it was very short notice with everyone. So
wow.
Yeah, it was she actually asked me to do the Glasgow one, and I said, well, I can't actually get to Glasgow because there's only like two flights a week here, and it was the next day, and I say I can't go. There's no flight. So she didn't get back to me, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe she's found somebody else. And you know, and then she contacted me again to do the London one. So yeah, and again it was like the day before, but it was an amazing experience. It was so It was very surreal, but at the same time, it was like, I don't know, like it felt normal as well. I don't know how to explain that. Like I was on stage with like, there was like 15,000 people or more in the audience, and like Snoop Dogg was singing next to me, but it also kind of felt like, okay, it's a stage and Snoop Dogg is a human, you know? It was a strange experience, but it was amazing. And I got to meet him, and he was such a cool guy. Like he had such an amazing energy. I was blown away by actually like by how sweet he was. And I feel like, yeah, meeting him was actually the best part of the whole thing. Just like being next to him and just feeling his energy.
Well, that's so cool. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I've never really met a huge celebrity, but even talking to you, or when I talk to Amy Hazel, which you are celebrities in my book, it's nice when you meet someone like that and they kind of exceed your expectations of being down to earth and connecting with them as a person when they're kind of on a pedestal in our society. So that's very cool. When you said it felt normal, I imagine that it was, again, accumulation of all of your skills and your experience traveling and dancing around the world that allowed you to be like, to say yes to, okay, tomorrow I'll go to London. I don't have costumes. I'm going to make this happen and feel good about it, because not everyone would be able to say yes to that, you know?
Yeah, I guess like, I mean, it always works out in the end, and I know that from experience, like with everything in my life, it's always like a bit messy and a bit disorganized, but it always works out in the end somehow. So it was like, yeah, I didn't have costumes because my costumes were in Scotland, and I wasn't prepared, but I was like, it's an opportunity of a lifetime, and yeah, somehow it's going to work out. And I also had not been able to sleep the night before. It was like pumping adrenaline, and yeah, I managed to still do it even with no sleep, so it always works out, doesn't it?
Yes, and that will be comforting for people to hear, because I've experienced that the night before a competition where you know you need the sleep the most and the sleep doesn't come and you're like, am I going to be able to perform? But yes, you probably will be able to perform.
Yeah, it's annoying, isn't it, when you're like trying to get to sleep, and it makes it worse when you're thinking my show is going to be crap because I'm going to do it with no sleep.
Yes, but if anyone has a competition coming up and they're worried about something like that, if things don't go perfectly leading up to it, it actually could contribute to a better performance. You know, having like an edge of adrenaline, I guess, or I don't know how to explain it, but
I agree. Yeah.
some of my like better performances competing or on stage in the clubs when I was working in the clubs would come at the end of a really stressful day. Like I'd go into my shift being like, I can't even work this shift. What am I doing? And then you hit the stage and something comes out of you. So it's interesting how that works.
Yeah, I find that really interesting as well. Like, because I also remember like some of my best shows in my life were actually in the club, like with no warm up, with like, you know, a little bit drunk, like no preparation, just like, you know, just doing it, like no sleep. It's so strange, isn't it? It's like your body just you know, it chooses when to just perform at its best, and it doesn't matter about the circumstance.
Well, you know, they talk about being in flow, like the flow state where you're truly not thinking and your body and brain are like perfectly in sync and you're kind of performing at your best in a natural way. I feel the same, that some of my best performances have been in the club when the stakes are low. It's not like the pole theater competition that I've been preparing for, and you want that to be the best performance. Like it may have been a good performance, but it's not the feeling I've gotten when I walk off stage at the club and I'm like, that was like one of the best, that's the best I've ever danced.
Yeah, do you know what? I was actually thinking about this yesterday. Like, it's true. Like, that flow state is like the most amazing experience ever, isn't it? It's like you just can't even explain what it's like. And unfortunately, it doesn't always happen in a competition. And I don't know if it's because of like pressure or over preparation or overthinking. I don't know. Like it's strange, isn't it? Like I remember like some nights in the club, yeah, I'm like completely connected with everyone in the room, and just yeah, I feel like I'm floating on the pole. Like nothing feels hard. Everything just is effortless and aligned.
Yeah, and it is frustrating that that can't happen, but it's because you can't force it. You can't choose, like you can't tell your brain and body in the universe, I guess, that like this needs to happen now. And you can prepare and deliver a great performance, but I think you can't like demand that flow state necessarily. So, and also the thing about the competition, it's such a like one shot situation, and sometimes you can thrive under the pressure, but when I do smaller competitions like PoleSport.org, they're doing their first competition in Canada, in Vancouver since the pandemic. It's coming up in June. And I'm doing two categories because I hate just having the one shot. Because, like, you know, when you work in the club, you might have two or three shows a night or more shows that week. So the stakes are just lower and it lets you get into that state easier. So I'm like, I'm going to compete twice because I don't want to feel like it's this one shot, like too high of pressure situation.
That's actually a good idea. And yeah, what I would say about that is like I'm not the best at choreographing, to be honest, and I'm not the best at like preparing or organizing myself, but I think it like feels better to have like looser choreography and just be a bit like, okay, I'll loosely create something. 'Cause I feel like you kind of need like a little bit of freedom to just like move and feel. And I feel like if there's too much like rigid choreography, like step by step, I feel like it becomes into like this thinking thing where you're like thinking what comes next. I don't know, that just works for me. Like I usually never prepare the end of a show. Like I don't know, I just skip it and I just do whatever comes to me in that moment just to give myself like more freedom to like enjoy and like feel and see what works with the audience at that time. I don't know if that's helpful, but that's my
I
style.
think it's great advice. And yeah, it like of course for someone preparing for a competition or performance, and if they want to freestyle, they should be comfortable freestyling. So train a lot of freestyles, like instead of only taking choreo classes or whatever, because you want to feel confident in your ability to move in the moment. But for me, I think a lot of people who do work in the club were pretty comfortable with freestyling, and I've freestyled competitions and placed and felt really good about it. And then other times not, because sometimes if you freestyle the whole thing, you kind of miss like bigger tricks that you know you can do and they just don't happen. So I think, like you said, a blend, like a loose structure, is a good approach.
Actually, I remember just like talking about what we were saying before. I remember like I was studying for a massage therapy course, and we had to like do like these practical days where we had to massage like seven people a day, with like a 15-minute break between them.
Oh my
It was
God.
like next to no break because that was the time for us to like put new towels out. It was very intense, and I remember like I'd just finished like a full day, and a Australian shimmy, like she sent me a message to say, "Can you perform tonight at Dance Filthy as a guest performance?" And
Oh my God.
I like my first reaction was like, "I'm gonna die like if I do that." And then because I think they wanted me to go on at the end or something, so it would be quite late as well. But I didn't want to turn it down because I do love performing. So I just went along, and honestly, like I really loved my performance. It was like one of the very few performances that I really loved. It was so strange how like I was physically exhausted, mentally exhausted, like my hands and my wrists were actually sore, and I managed to like just flow through my performance. So strange. With no choreography, complete freestyle.
That's like a perfect example of what we were just talking about. Yeah, that's amazing. And I hope people listening, I'm helping some students from our studio prepare for their first competition. A lot of us are going to this competition in June. So I just am thinking of them as we talk, because it can be kind of stressful. You don't know what to expect, but Yeah, I hope people just take the pressure off themselves. Like if something happens in the days or weeks leading up to the competition that throw you off, don't mentally throw in the towel. You know, just stay in the moment, do what you can, and you know you might surprise yourself on stage. So
yeah, I agree with that. And I feel like also it's like I feel like there always is challenges up to a competition. Like I feel like it's part of the process. Like I always find that there's always something, whether it's like a costume issue or
like a minor injury or something.
Yeah. And it's very strange, but I feel like the whole process is like is a mental process as well. It's not just about like the show. And I feel like sometimes we don't embrace the process and we don't learn from it. We're just like so focused on getting that like perfect show. And actually, there's no such thing as a perfect show. Like, I don't know anyone that's done a perfect show, you know, in their eyes. And like, even when I've like won competitions, I've looked back and I'm like, it wasn't perfect. And it's like, it's never going to be perfect. So I think like valuing the whole process rather than just fixating on the outcome is so important in competing. Like, I don't actually think there's any point in competing if you're just going to focus on that one show. Like you need to enjoy the whole thing.
Totally. And that's such good like general life advice, to be more process oriented rather than fixated on the outcome, which is something you can't always control. And that does make me think of another process, which is pregnancy and motherhood. And talk about things you can't control as well, right? So let's shift gears a little bit and start talking about your motherhood journey. So when did you fall pregnant, and what was, if you would be willing to share, what did your life look like at the time? Like, did you have a lot of competitions coming up, or were you, cause I know for a lot of pole dancers, like whether they're professional pole dancers or people who teach a little bit, or even if it's just a hobby, when we're approaching motherhood or starting to think about it, there's a lot of anxieties that can come up. Like, am I going to have to set, sorry, my dogs, set pole dancing aside, or, you know, what is my life going to look like? So can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I liked your little, I like the barking.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was very kind of apprehensive to have a child. I really didn't know if I would lose all my skills. And I was like, so hardworking. Like, honestly, I was just, to the point it was obsessive. Like I just wanted to train all the time. And I just thought, like, you know, is being pregnant for 9 months going to completely change my body? Like, am I still going to be flexible? Like, I just didn't want to lose my skills. That was like my main fear. And it was a while, like, it took me a while to like kind of be like, oh, actually it might be fun to have a child. I was never really a kiddie person as well. Like I'm not really maternal. Like I would never think of myself as like a mothering kind of maternal person. And yeah, just one day I was like, okay, let's try. And yeah, I fell pregnant really fast. I didn't have any competitions coming up anytime soon. I did have guest performances. Actually, the day I found out I was going to do a guest performance, and I didn't know what the hell to do. I was like, can I still do pole? Like I hadn't done any research or anything. So I just did it, and I was doing kips and stuff, and I was like, oh no, like, is the baby going to be okay? It was a very exciting time, but I was also like full of nerves. And yeah, it was quite a journey. Yeah, from the very beginning, it was a crazy experience being a mom.
Well, yeah, having to do a guest performance and just after you found out you were pregnant, it's in the very like early days when you're kind of not supposed to tell anyone, and even though the bait, like, yeah, we feel like I remember doing like a fish flop in a class that I was teaching, and at around like very early, like 6 weeks. And you're like, is the baby going to be okay? Because even though you feel like everything's changed, even though outwardly nothing's changed and the physical changes are still kind of yet to come, mentally, there's like this shift, like you've taken this step mentally and it feels like your whole life is different and you can't even tell people. Yeah. So that it's so hard because, yeah, I remember going to work at the club when I was like 6 weeks pregnant. And I felt just like a world away from how I had been a couple weeks ago, even though nothing had really changed.
Yeah, I really relate to that a lot. I was still dancing, and then I transitioned from dancing in the clubs to like doing under like lingerie waitressing, because I was like, maybe it's better to just like, you know. It wasn't much different, but like, yeah, I felt like I was like keeping this secret to everyone, you know. And it was I felt really different actually, and it wasn't like, I did it for quite a while until my bump became visible and somebody was like, you look different, like you got a baby in there. I was like, okay, it's time to stop now.
It's really hard in those early stages when your whole world has changed, but you can't really share it with everyone at that time. And yeah, it's hard for people who work in the entertainment industry or the like working as an exotic dancer or something. The question of how long do I stay at work? Do I even want to stay at work? But what am I going to do if I stop? There's no paid maternity leave.
Exactly. Yeah. And I felt pretty good throughout my pregnancy. So, you know, I didn't really have much sickness or anything apart from I felt quite nauseous when I smelled beer, which in a club isn't so great. So, you know, every now and again, I just feel nauseous when I could smell the beer off people's breath, you know, and then it just became a bit too much. I was like, okay, I just need to like chill out at home now. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. And were you living in Australia, I think, when you first found out you were pregnant?
Yeah, I was living in Sydney, and we were kind of like not sure what we were doing. It was always this thing like, what are we doing, are we going to stay, are we going to leave? And yeah, when I got pregnant, I guess like we just decided to make a big change and just leave. We'd been there like over 3 years, and we had talked about trying to stay and trying to get like a permanent residency, but it just didn't really make sense. It was like the first child, and we thought it would be better to be closer to family. Plus I was still studying, and like you can't really study massage therapy when you have a child. So yeah, I was like, okay, let's just go back. And it was so hard. It was like the hardest thing I've ever done, like leaving Australia. It was heartbreaking.
Aww.
Yeah, it was hard, but in some ways I think it was necessary for everything else that was to come after.
Right. Yeah, that would be a hard, it's like transitions on top of transitions, right? And yeah, being pregnant, it's just a time where a lot of things feel up in the air, and it can be hard to like, I mean, we never have control over most things in our life, but that feeling is really heightened in pregnancy, I find. But
yeah, I felt really strange. Like I was very, very upset and kind of like unsettled. Like I felt so unsettled and uncertain. And yeah, coming back to Scotland, it just felt like a big mistake. Even though I was near my family, I was like, don't feel comfortable here at all. Like I don't feel like myself. And I think it was like all the hormonal changes as well. So it was a big challenge, but I feel like if I hadn't come back to Scotland, I wouldn't have created a line. So, you know, I traded one thing for something else, which was amazing and also life-changing. So,
right. And you said your pregnancy was not too symptomatic, like not too challenging, and were you able to do some pull and training throughout?
Yeah, I didn't stop actually. Apart from like, you know, when I was like 38 weeks, I slowed down with the pole. I was just too heavy, and I still stretched though. I actually was stretching up until the day that I gave birth. I actually, my waters broke when I was in a squat pose. So I was like, I was stretching because it helped me feel balanced. So I really did it for like therapeutic reasons as well as like kind of maintenance. So yeah, I didn't stop. And I feel like it helped a lot. Like I think that's why I kind of had a good pregnancy. I also think that that's why my son is so wild, because he was all over the place upside down, and yeah, he's like an adrenaline junkie, and I think it is definitely from the pole in the
It very well could be. And I'm sure that's really fun, a fun energy, but also probably challenging. My son is 8 months old, and the banging we just heard is he must have woke up from his nap and he likes to bang the dog bowls on the ground.
Oh my
And
God.
that's just the beginning of, like, I'm sure the wildness that once they become toddlers and everything. But
Yes.
how was your postpartum experience? And if you're willing, your breastfeeding journey, because some of the pictures I'd love to see you share, you'd be stretching and nursing your son.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, the breastfeeding was an amazing journey, but it was also one of the hardest things I've done. It's just like exhausting, but it's also amazing. It's so difficult. It's like, I did it for a long time. I did it until he was like 2.5. And yeah, there was times when I was like, oh, I just feel like I want to stop. And then the next day I'm like, no, I don't want to stop. But like, he was not willing to stop. He wanted to just carry on. He would have carried on until now. And he's 4. But it was amazing. Like, I felt like it felt natural to me. Like, I was just kind of going with my intuition and my instincts, and it felt good to breastfeed for that length of time. I knew when it was time to stop, like when it was really time to stop, but yeah, I just kind of went with the flow of it all. I mean, at the beginning, when I first had Orlando, I was like Googling everything. It was driving me nuts. I was asking everyone and getting all different kinds of advice about everything. And then there was one point I was just like, I'm just going to stop and just listen to myself and just do what I feel like. Because in every area of my life, I do everything by myself. And I, like even being pole dancer and things and self-taught, like I never really listen to people. I always just do what I, feel like doing. I trust myself. But with the motherhood, I just felt it felt so alien that at the beginning, and I was just not prepared. Like, I just was asking everyone for advice and not getting anywhere, and it just felt like so much better when I just gave up the Google searches and just did, what felt right. And I'm really happy that I did that. I was breastfeeding for so long, and yeah, I still sleep with him actually. I've been sleeping next to him since birth, so I'm sure we're going to have a good bond throughout life, I think, and I'm sure he's going to be quite secure. Don't know how long it'll take me to get my bed fully back, but we'll see.
I love all of that so much. Yeah, I'm a bed sharing mama too. I have been since he was born on, like, a floor bed in his nursery, and I love it. I don't know how any mom gets any sleep without, especially if they're nursing. But I realized I need it as much as he does at this stage. Like, he was having kind of a rough, like, just waking really early in the morning and waking through the night a lot because he was teething the other week. And in the early morning hours, my husband took him because I was like, I can't right now. Like, I need to try to sleep. And I couldn't sleep without him. I couldn't fall asleep, even though I was so tired. So I was like, give him back. And then I was able to fall asleep with him next to me.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Like, you think that you want your own space and you want to sleep on your own, and then you try it and it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, that was my experience. And I know, of course, every mom and every family's experience is going to be different and what works for them. But I just personally love to see examples of, like, longer term breastfeeding, although some people like to call it, like, natural term, because even the World Health Organization recommends nursing, like, to 2 years. And the biological norm for nursing is up to 3 or 4 years, like, globally.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, because you get people like, oh, you're not still breastfeeding, are you? You get like, kind of like these strange comments from people, and you get like eyes widening, like, oh, really? And sometimes you feel like, wow, like, am I doing something wrong? And it's actually really natural. And there's lots of parts of the world where the kids breastfeed until they're, yeah, like they're 4. I mean, Why not?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's, I think it's partially Western society is really loves independence, and we'd like our children to be independent as soon as possible so that the adults can like carry on with life as close to like to pre-baby as possible, which is not really a fair expectation if we're going to have a baby. Like, we can't expect it things to go back to normal that quickly. And then sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying this is so true. It's like, you know, what's more important, like, you know, giving your kid like a really nice, stable, loving relationship at the beginning, or is it like getting back to your life, you know? Because you can ease back into everything, like you said, like slowly. It doesn't have to be like, I need my life back, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the early years where maybe your baby can't, your child can't sleep without you and you're nursing them, and it can feel so intense mm-hmm. for a couple of years, but the scope of our life, like the rest of our life, it's going to be long enough of sleeping without them eventually, right? So I never want to sound patronizing because it can be hard in the early days. But again, trying to take a broader view and just accept yourself and your baby for where they're at, and don't try to force things, right?
Yeah, I think that was, especially with the sleeping. Orlando's been a really bad sleeper and he still wakes up sometimes. Like, it was hard. I feel like the hardest part of motherhood has definitely been the lack of sleep, especially like creating a business while I was like getting woken up so much was really, really challenging. It was like one of the most challenging things in my life ever. But I did, you know, when there was times where I was like, I don't know what to do, you know, like people kind of like advise you to just let them cry and things. And I just like, it didn't feel good to me. And he would have slept better if I had done that, who knows, but like it just didn't feel like what I wanted to do. I wanted to just, you know, suffer a little bit, but like kind of like take my time with it and just deal with it. And I did remind myself that like this is just a really small part of his life. It's not forever, and he's not going to be a little kid, like a little baby forever. He's going to grow up one day and leave home. So like, this is just a really small part of his life and my life. And, you know, I can deal with it.
Yes. And I personally feel the exact same way about not wanting to sleep train. And I know I've had all like moms with all different experiences with sleep come on the podcast. Some people sleep trained, and I never want any listener to feel any kind of way when, like, say you and I are just, we're only talking about how we feel and what worked for us. And I think it's important to get all sides of the spectrum and all sides of the experience out there. Yeah. And you have to take into account your baby too, because some babies I've heard they'll self-wean eventually. They're like, they almost are done with breastfeeding, but you said your toddler wasn't ready. And so it maybe wouldn't have been good to try to force weaning earlier than you did, right?
Yeah, I did like, at some points I was like, oh, you know, like I'd hear like my friends, oh, he just weaned on his own. It was really easy. And I'm like, my baby just does not want to stop. But yeah, you're so right. It's like everyone does things, you know, their own way, and everyone is different and every child is different. There's like not one size fits all. So yeah, it's important to just embrace your own journey
mm-hmm.
when it comes to motherhood.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the challenge of creating and running your business, being a mom to a young child. Can you talk about that a little bit more? Like, how do you strive to balance mom life with being an entrepreneur in the pole dancing space?
Yeah, well, what I will say is it is much easier now. Much, much easier. But in the early stages, it was really hard because I was exhausted. And I started by doing Zoom classes like during the pandemic. I was doing like 4 Zoom classes a week, which it doesn't seem like a lot, but there was a lot of admin. There was a lot of emails, and I was sending out the recordings. I hired my mum. We were living at my mum's house, and I hired her to send out the emails. So eventually I had to, I just couldn't get it all done. Like, I was like breastfeeding just before I was going to teach a Zoom class, and I'd had no sleep, you know, I'd been woken up like 10 times, and It was so exhausting, and I was, you know, like doing needle scales while I was like suffering inside, you know, like feeling so tired and drained. And it was challenging, like doing all of that when I had a really young child, like there's no doubt about that. But I did have my mum's help, which was really good. So yeah, it was challenging in the beginning, and I also didn't know anything about technology really, so I was like really like learning a new skill, also learning a new skill, how to be a mum.
Right.
So it was hard. Now things are flowing better, and it's just so much easier. Wow. I'm so grateful.
Well, that's good to hear that it gets easier, of course.
It's not easy. It's like, it's still hard work, and there's like challenges at every age. So although Orlando's 4 now, like he's so active, like it is exhausting as well. And it's, yeah, it is hard to balance. I've learned how to like kind of like separate things. You know, if I'm trying to do something for the business while he's there, I just don't feel good. He's constantly interrupting, and it just becomes like a big mess, whatever I'm doing. So I've learned to like separate things. Like when I'm with him, it's mum time. You know, when he's at the school, it's my time to do my business. And I think having that separation between roles is so important.
That's good advice. Yeah. Trying to, cause it might seem like being an entrepreneur or like working from home or having your own business, it might seem, oh, that's more flexible. You can do that while being a mom, but not really, because being a mom, it does kind of demand most, if not all, of your time and attention. So it's not like you can just work from home all day while also being a mom. So finding a way to compartmentalize those things to be your best in all of them is probably a good approach.
Yeah, definitely doesn't work to like, you know, be posting on Instagram and like with a toddler or a child like next to you, like, you know, demanding your attention. It doesn't work and it doesn't feel good. So yeah, mm-hmm. That's something I've learned for sure. No, I was finished. It's fine.
I was just going to say that I took some of those classes right at the start of the pandemic in early 2020. I took some of your classes, and my back is like a table. And when I was taking your classes regularly, I was making progress, but I did not keep it up once everything resumed. I should get back into it. But I was just going to say, I would have never guessed that you were sleep deprived. You presented yourself very well to your students, so I commend you for that.
Oh, thanks. Well, I'm glad that you were progressing through the classes. That's excellent. Yeah, well, actually, the Zoom classes, at the beginning, I was super shy to teach online. Like, it felt uncomfortable and weird, but then it became like performing, you know? It became it was like my little escape as well from, you know, kind of like mum life. I don't mean escape, but I mean, like, it was kind of like, here's a chance for to just be me and to kind of like step out of like the mum role. And like, yeah, like I really enjoyed the kind of performing aspect of it, you know, like people watching me. I guess I always, you know, have that in me. I love performing, and it, you know, it felt like that somehow. So yeah, even if I was sleep deprived, I was still good at, yeah, doing the exercises and engaging with everyone.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, kind of, you get, when you're teaching, it's the same as when you're on stage. You kind of, you're like, okay, I have to do this. And you kind of get this like superpower you didn't know you had if you were trying to just do it without an audience.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and backbending, oh, it's so hard. And whenever I read your story on Instagram of how you had to work so hard at it, I'm like, okay, because it's easy to see someone and think they just have it and I don't. But you are the proof that that is not the case. And so,
yeah, that's true. It's a long process. And I think, you know, when you commit to a flexibility practice, it's like, you have to be dedicated and you have to commit to the consistency. And you also have to like commit to the idea that patience is required, like deep patience, because it's not a fast process. Maybe it is for some people, but generally it's quite slow. So you have to learn how to like it and how to actually enjoy the whole process. And that way, like, the results will come on their own.
That is Yeah, that's such good advice and a good perspective. And again, it goes back to the same thing you're talking about with competing, focusing on the process. Because yeah, I can see with flexibility training, if you're really focused on the outcome, which is maybe, oh, my needle scale, you're not going to stick with it.
No, definitely not. Because with flexibility as well, like your body can be really stiff some days. Like one day you might get your needle scale, the next day you'll be like far from it. It's just strange and it can be so frustrating. But also on those bad days, like you might get a bad week where your body's just not cooperating. And, you know, if you don't actually enjoy it, if you're not doing it for any other reason than just to get something, then you're more than likely will give up. So you have to actually like it, you know, like people who do pole dancing, they like going to classes. It has to be the same for flexibility. You have to actually enjoy stretching, not think it's like boring or tedious or a job or like just an annoying thing that you have to do to get a split. It has to be, yeah, enjoyable.
Right. Well, that's a great perspective, and I will try to take that on and hopefully get back to a flexibility practice eventually here. But we're coming up to, I think, the end of our time. But if you have time, I wanted to ask you one more question, kind of unrelated. But you have a lot of experience traveling and moving internationally, both before you became a mom and it seems after. So do you have any like tips or anything you could share about traveling internationally or moving abroad with a young child? Because a lot of parents are intimidated. Like a lot of times I've heard, and I even felt this way, I have to get all my traveling done before I become a mom because it's going to be impossible after. But it's not.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not impossible. And I think the only way that it is impossible is if you have that thought. What I will say is like, it's, you know, when parents get scared because they think like their kids will not adapt to the change, that's generally like the biggest fear, is like going to a new place. Oh, how is he or she going to adapt to the change? It might be unsettling, it might be difficult, it might be that it's all thoughts, it's not reality. It's not the truth. So I feel like, yeah, I was like this in the beginning as well, like, oh no, like, you know, he's going to be unsettled, it's going to be difficult. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of like removing those thoughts and kind of like embracing the change. Like your child needs to learn about change because change is part of life, a really big part of life. Like anyone that resists change is inevitably going to suffer, you know, because change is life. So, you know, having that thought that actually, you know, it's good to change, it's good to go somewhere new, it's going to help to build your child's character. And it's, you know, if you kind of like switch your thinking, switch your perspective, it gets easier. Yeah. And don't listen to everyone. You know, there's a lot of people that make it out that it's harder than it is, judging from their experience, but everyone's experience is different, just like every child is different and every mom is different, so you cannot compare. You just have to, if it's something that feels true to you, to travel or to go to change countries and to move, relocate with your child, then just do it if it feels true.
That was not the tip I was expecting, but it is the tip we all need, and that it's a mindset thing, and that it's your thoughts that are going to make it easier or harder. Yeah. And that's a lesson that children probably actually accept the lesson of change easier than adults. Like most adults, including me, really fear change. And you're totally right. Yeah. It's the one constant in life. And also I'm sure if you go into it thinking that your child is going to like struggle, whether it's a trip overseas or like a bigger move or whatever, if you are feeling like it's going to be hard, then I'm sure your child's going to pick up on that.
That's so true. And it's like what you said right at the beginning. You said something about like how we're kind of like co-regulating mm-hmm. all the time. Like it's so true. If you're fine, your child is fine. If you have anxiety, your child is going to be hard work. Like that's just the reality of it. And you're both feeding off each other, especially if you're doing like what we are doing with the co-sleeping and everything. Like you're so intertwined with your child. Like anything you feel, they're going to feel. So if you can like stay calm and, you know, embrace the process and find ways to regulate yourself, your child is also going to feel calm and at ease.
That's amazing life lessons applicable to me in my current situation. And I'm sure everyone can see a place in their life where they can apply that, whether they're traveling internationally with a baby or not. So thank you for sharing that. You're very
Yeah, and I
wise.
just will say one more thing, like it's not easy.
Right, right.
I'm not saying like it's so easy for me or it's this is the, you know, like the whole everything with motherhood is a huge it's trial and error and it's like not easy. Like these things are it's a practice. It's for me motherhood is like a spiritual practice. It's amazing, but it's not easy. So yeah, these things you learn as you go along.
Right. Yeah. And thank you for saying that, because even we can hear, okay, we need to keep ourselves regulated, and so that because we're worried about how it'll impact our children, and that can add even more stress, right? So,
Yeah.
and it shouldn't, but like admitting that it's hard can be part of the process too. So, thank you for saying that.
Definitely, yeah.
So, I think we've come up on our time. I mean, we could talk forever, but I want to respect your time as well. And I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show. But before I let you go, quickly, what are your virtual offerings right now? If people want to train with you, like where can they find you, or what does the program look like?
So, my program is called Align, www.alignwithfelicity.com, and it's a subscription-based website. It's a bit like Netflix, but it's all about stretching, floor work, and pole dancing. And we have a library that's pretty huge. There's like over 450 classes on there, so it's all on demand. And yeah, it's there's a lot to choose from, and there's a lot of content for all different levels. So that's what I have. And
And you have
there's a
a,
couple of different.
there's an
There's
app,
a
right?
yeah, it's an app. So we now have the app, which is really cool. And there's like a package, the gold package, which I also have like two live workshops a month. So there's a chance to like learn in a live environment as well as the on-demand library.
That's really cool. So you went from feeling at the start of the pandemic like you weren't very good at technology, and now you have an app, a mobile app where people can train with you. So you made a lot of progress there.
Yeah, it did somehow. I didn't have the choice. I forced myself to do it, but eventually it became not easy, but doable.
Yes, very cool. So, for the listeners, if you want to connect with Felicity on Instagram, if you haven't already, or if you want to train with her, I'm going to link all of that in the show notes. So, thank you again, Felicity, and thank you to the listeners for tuning in. I hope you got a lot out of this conversation. I know I did. And if you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. Bring the conversation and the podcast to more people who might enjoy it. And I'll talk to you all next week. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Dancer Mama podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing so you don't miss an episode. I'd love to know what you thought, so please leave a rating, review, or connect with me on Instagram at the Dancer Mama podcast. See you next time.